This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our March 29th, 2018 edition of Invest Talk. And let's see if we can make this hour worth your investment of time. And we call each and every show a session in above average investing for the average investor. And many investors are in search of that one formula, that trick, or that secret to make good investment decisions. Either black box or some metric that they can follow to make sure that they're doing the right thing. But in truth, it doesn't really exist. Now, it may exist over short periods of time where certain things work, right? So if you bought almost any tech stock over the past year or so, you're probably up money, right? And there's markets where certain factors are in vogue. Certain types of stocks are in vogue. Certain types of investments are in vogue. But in order to succeed over the long term, you cannot just focus on one area of the investment world or rely on one simple rule. Now, many people lean heavily on valuation to determine their investment choices, which is something that we do at KPP as well. But there are two flaws with leaning too heavily on only valuation. One is timing, and the other is ambiguity. What does that mean? Well, I'll explain that in a moment. But first things first, let's move to our question and answer line. It's our 24-hour listener line. Our first obligation, as always, during the hour is to answer your questions. So you can reach us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, on 888-99-CHART, or you can leave your question after hours, and we will try to answer it on an upcoming show. So here's one that came in before today's program.
Hi guys, I'm 49 years old. Most of my retirement is managed by a professional, but I'm beginning to set aside money in sort of a quote play fund to just sort of learn how the market works. It's not a significant amount of money, but this portfolio currently consists of about 70% of index funds like SPY, DIA, et cetera, and the balance in what I've determined are good buy and hold stocks like P&G, Visa, Apple, et cetera. I'd like to learn how to buy bonds or bond funds, but I just don't know where to start. It seems very confusing. What would you recommend?
Great question. He sounds like he's getting older, trying to maybe de-risk his portfolio, get some stability, and bonds are a good way to do that. I would recommend individual bonds. Now, one drawback of that is that typically you have to buy at least $5,000 to $10,000 per bond position for you to get into any of those bonds, and you want to diversify. You know, in our balanced income strategy, in our stable income strategies, we buy individual bonds. We ladder them over time. From 3 to 7 years is kind of where we're sticking right now. And you want to diversify across maybe 10 different names. Your broker can help with that if you have a broker. You can do research probably on their website to figure out what bonds are out there, what are the bids, what are the asks. They should have a filter feature, and you want to filter by things. You want corporate bonds, or do you want municipal bonds if it's a taxable account and you want to avoid taxes? There's a lot of factors that go into that. You want to look at credit ratings, and then you want to look at the balance sheet of the stock, the strength of the business if you're looking at corporations. So there's various factors to look into to see whether the risk versus reward is there for particular bond positions. Now, if you want to buy an individual bond fund, then you have to look at where we are in relation to historic valuations above treasuries. You have to figure out your time horizon and how much interest rate risk you want to take, how much credit risk you want to take. Do you want to stay in government bonds, which are going to yield lower and have more duration risk, meaning the if interest rates rise, they're going to go down in value. Corporate bonds are going to have higher yield, less duration risk, especially as you go out into junk bonds, etc. But that also exposes you to more credit risk, right, from corporations defaulting. And high-yield bond funds, they typically are kind of hybrid at debt and equity asset classes. So there's a lot of factors to consider. I hope that kind of helped you get a sense of how you want to think about your bond holdings. I would recommend, yeah, I like that you're buying individual stocks, long-term buy and hold stocks, but I would start to take some of those index positions away or sell them relatively soon and start to diversify into the bond market. It just depends on how much money you have, which I don't know, and what type of risks you're willing to take. Hope that helped. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So let's talk a little bit about valuation to determine your investing choices. Now, the research group GMO, in a study, attempted to quantify how much valuation matters to future equity performance over time. Now, what they found was that valuation correlated to future returns gradually over long periods of time. So in year one, valuations mattered about 20%, really not that much. And then over a 7-year span, valuations mattered dramatically, about 50%. And it's over a 17-year period, valuations mattered by about 75%. Now, 17 years seems like a long time, and it kind of is, but if you think 7 years, you know, so we've been in this phase of the market for 7 years, the bull market, and, you know, for much of that, valuations haven't mattered too much. You know, the market has been relatively overvalued for many years now, and that can happen. And that means valuation is important, but it can lead you down the wrong road for many years at a time before the market comes to their senses, which is something that a lot of times has to do with liquidity. And that's what you're seeing now, is you're seeing liquidity dry up in the markets and valuations are suddenly mattering again. That's part of the reason why you're seeing the tech stocks really sell off, because their valuations are grossly high. Now, it comes to the ambiguity part. Determining exact valuation is an imperfect science that is filled with many guesses. So don't ever let anyone's valuation, like an analyst who might put a value on a stock, don't ever think that's the holy grail of an investment decision. That's just their opinion. Now, it's maybe a good starting place. It should only be a small part of the decision-making process. Risk should come into play. How much risk does that particular name have? What's the uncertainty of that valuation? How cyclical is the company? What valuation do you come up with based on your own analysis? So you want to be well-rounded so you can understand and grasp the business that the company you're looking at is in, the industry that they're operating in, and then the economic changes that are happening every day. There's also currency fluctuations, geopolitical trends that matter as well. Think of the trade tariffs that Trump is starting to talk about and implement. That is going to affect certain industries, certain companies. Okay, and then what is the ECB doing? What is the Bank of Japan doing? How do their currency fluctuations affect the companies that you're looking at? So you have to have many skills to really analyze an individual name. And you have to be balanced in your views. You never want to tie yourself to one particular investment philosophy or numbers. You want to look at the pros and the cons of each individual name, each individual security you're holding, and in context to your goals. Now, do you have any questions about analyzing stocks, analyzing the market, analyzing the economy? Let's talk about it. We have about 40 minutes left in the show. So I'd like to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our direct number. Now, we have some topics on the table to discuss. One is maybe three reasons not to sell after this market downturn. And I'll give you three reasons why you should sell as well. So I'm going to look once again, pros and cons, okay? And then I also want to talk about the credit markets. I always say credit markets are the most important area of the marketplace that you need to consider, that most people ignore. And then I want to talk a little bit about growth versus value and what's the outlook for growth stocks versus value stocks. And then inflation. The Fed is changing their tune on inflation and why that matters. So those are things that are on my mind, but ultimately I want to hear from you. This is Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Invest Talk works best when you're involved. Your questions help keep us on track, making sure we address the real life money issues that you bring to us. So I'm glad you're here with us today on this edition of Invest Talk. Take part in the conversation. Ask your questions. Share a comment at 888-99-CHART.
Managing multiple mutual funds, researching professional services, where to put your savings. If it's about money and if it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on Invest Talk.
Hey, guys. Jeffrey from Vacaville. I'm looking for a strategy on whether to hold or sell my Red Hat Inc., RHT. Picked this up a while ago. It's done really good for me. I kind of picked it up on a hype, so didn't have a good strategy behind it. Looking to either sell high or let me know if this is a good company to stick with. Again, Red Hat, RHT. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, he's looking at Red Hat Incorporated. This is a provider of open source enterprise operating systems and related system management services based on Linux. Certainly a good company. Return equity 40%, so very profitable, and they consistently grow their earnings. 2012, they made $1.09, and pretty much every year they've grown their earnings anywhere from 10 to 30 cents, 40 cents in a particular year. Then in 2020, they're supposed to make $4.03. So you're talking about a quadruple in earnings in 8 years. That's a pretty good performance. Now, will they make it there? You know, that's analysts are usually over-optimistic. But even 2018, they're going to make $3. So they've tripled their earnings in 6 years. That's a very strong performance. No dividend. Modest amount of debt, 60% debt to equity ratio. Revenues are accelerating from in the high teens in late 2016 into the low 20s last quarter. So that's a positive. Earnings growth roughly averages somewhere in the 20% range over the past couple of years. So earnings are definitely doing well. Up so about 15% in 2019 and 17% next year. The question is, is the run over? Is the run in jeopardy? And based on the recent, I'm going to go bring up the technical chart. And if you're on our Facebook, or not Facebook, I keep saying Facebook, YouTube live stream, you'll see this chart up here. And this is a name that is got caught up with the tech wreck, right? Because it is in the tech space. So many growth names really took it on the chin. And you saw that recently, and it was up 3.3% today, but that's after a pretty decent sell-off. I'm still trying to bring up the chart, but in general, this is a very strong company, but it is overvalued. I think it's a good long-term play, but it's likely to get caught up in the large sell-off and underperformance of growth in general. So I would be wary of that and make sure that you realize, and I think they did have earnings a couple days ago, and it rallied and sold off. And that's really a big worry for me on big volume, and that tells me we're probably near at least a medium-term top on Red Hat. And so I would definitely take some money off the table, and certainly just depends on tax consequences, how much you're up, what type of account it's in, etc. But we're definitely at extreme valuations, stretched valuations, and it's likely that this is a name that should be on everyone's watch list, but it's kind of peaked out in the medium term. This is Invest Talk. Transitions are often a part of retiring and moving to a smaller house or a more affordable locale, for example. Maybe in the cards for you. Give me a call. Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues on a service of KPP Financial. There's no sales pitch. You can look at the KPP investment packages at your leisure right there on investtalk.com. And then if you have questions, you can ask them online or on the phone. Breakthrough ideas, independent thinking, shared success with parallel investing. And now it's time to check in with your money question on Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Mac in Los Cabos. How you doing, Mac?
Very good, thank you. I was calling about CX, CEMEX.
Okay.
Cement company.
See what you. What do you like about it?
Well, you know what? I read about it in your newsletter, and I was watching it, and I bought a small position in it, and to tell you the truth, as I look at the statistics on it and stuff, I'm trying to figure out if I should sell it on the bounce, or it looks like it's hit a bottom here where it's at.
Well, this is CEMEX. This is a Mexican... This is a Mexican manufacturer of cement, ready-mix concrete, and other related building materials. So they're one of the largest cement producers in the world out of Mexico. Their revenues are going up about 8%, and earnings this year are supposed to be about 53 cents, up 23% over last year, and then grow another 23% next year. So it's certainly doing better than it has in the mid-2000s when it was losing money for many years. So it's certainly doing better. Now, there's going to be some potential currency risk there, as well as NAFTA. What's going to happen with NAFTA? So that's probably what's part of the reason it's sold off. Now, I don't really think it's going to really have any major issues. So I kind of like it from a valuation standpoint, even though it doesn't pay a dividend. And it's relatively cheap. If you look at the operating to earnings yield of 12.84, which is about 13%, is pretty high. Enterprise value to EBITDA is at around 10, which isn't super low, but it's not too bad. The question is, are you looking for a bounce, or are you trying to buy this long term?
Well, I was going. Well, now I'm thinking about getting out of it. To tell you the truth, the return on equity, what I'm seeing, is really bad. And no dividend. I just was questioning it. I was looking to get out of it, really.
Okay. The return on equity is 7%, which, isn't certainly not great. But I do think... you're headed for a bounce relatively soon. There's been pretty high volume the last week, and usually that tells me that short term it's probably oversold and likely to get a bounce. So I would sell it probably on a bounce, especially if you're not happy with it. You're not looking to hold it long term because it is in a relative downturn. But I do think long term it's still undervalued. And I think a lot of the pressures from potential NAFTA changes, et cetera, are likely to abate. But if you're, like I said, if you're looking to get out of it, I would wait for a bounce, and I think we're pretty close to that.
Oh, you couldn't have been more helpful. Thank you so much for all you do.
No problem. Thanks, Mac. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 30 minutes left, but so I urge you to get your call in sooner rather than later. Now I'm going to talk about three reasons not to sell after the recent market downturn. And I'm only going to talk about three reasons maybe you should. Okay? Now, and this the main reason I'm doing this is because I like to be balanced. I like to be balanced in my view. There's always pros and cons to every decision that you make. And sometimes your job is to figure out which ones outweigh the other. Now, first, on the positive side, downturns tend to be followed by upturns. Okay, now, declines in asset values are usually very temporary. Now, research shows that the average duration of a bear market is less than one-fifth the average of a bull market. And this goes back to what we talked about is markets take the stairs up and the elevator down, and that's what you've kind of seen recently. And the average decline of a bear market is 28%. The average gain of a bull market is 128%. Okay, so now we haven't certainly seen the 28% drop in the market, but the bigger risk for investors is to miss out on the gain by trying to avoid the 28%, and that's certainly something that can happen. Okay, it's all about your strategy. Number two, it's difficult to time the market. If you missed from January 2nd, 1986 to 2015, the end of 2015, if you missed the 10 best days in the market each year, you would have grown $10,000 into $24,000. But if you stayed in that full time, it would go to $48,000. So you almost doubled your investment if you got those 10 days. So, and then lastly, make sure whatever you do, it's part of your investment plan. And I'm going to get to the negatives of the market after the break. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. The process of investing is more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course, and along the way, there are issues about taxes and then estate planning and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing your money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person could possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off decisions, important decisions. Most times, that's not productive. KPP Financial's philosophy is the more their clients know, the more successful they'll be, and the more predictable their future will be. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions. Now let's continue with the podcast. The program is called Invest Talk, and you need to do some of the talking. We're here to talk about maximizing your money. Is that about right? And you have questions about how to minimize risk and still be exposed to the potential for growth and dividends? Talk to Justin right now. The anytime number is 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Abishi in Sunnyvale. How you doing, Abishi?
Hi. Hey, Ben. I'm good.
What can I do for you?
Yes, I was wondering, I'm calling FireEye and A10 Networks, and I wanted to know which one to pick of the two for maybe a 6 or 1 year long investment.
What were the two names?
FireEye and AMD.
AMD, the chip maker?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at FireEye. This develops machine-based security platforms providing real-time protection. So they're in the data protection business. Their stock has definitely fallen from a high of roughly $80 a share back in 2014, hit a low of about $12 a share, and now we are at around $17 a share. So it's starting to rally. I like the chart, the uptrend. The valuation, you know, that's the rough part where they're not really making a ton of money, even though they're supposed to make some money this year, supposed to make 2 cents this year, 16 cents next year, even though they lost money from pretty much since they went IPO. So, you know, we're not big fans of companies that don't make money. And that's an issue for me, and that's one of the reasons why it fell so dramatically is their financial performance just has not been stellar. So certainly not a name I like from that perspective. Now, they don't have a lot of debt. That's positive. Very positive free cash flow, which is good. Let me look at their return on equity is negative. Return on assets are negative. You know, certainly not a name that is performing well from an investment perspective, and their growth is subpar. It's a 10% growth last quarter, and that's after four quarters in a row of single-digit growth. So not a fan of FireEye. So let's look at AMD. Okay. They are a name in somewhat similar fashion. Their earnings have been kind of all over the place, even though now in 2017 they made 17 cents a share. They're supposed to make 38 cents a share this year. $10 a share stock price, that's up from a dollar and change back in 2015, 16. Return on equity is 35%, so that's a positive. Revenues are growing at about 34%, another positive. The chart is now in a downtrend. That's the negative. Or FireEye is in an uptrend. AMD is in a downtrend. So to me, I like to line up the two. I'd rather have technicals positive as well as the fundamentals, and neither have both. They're kind of flipped. So if I'm going to pick one, however, I'm going to pick AMD. But it's also, to me, overvalued based on earnings, based on growth, because it's not really growing that much. Okay? So I wouldn't buy either, but if I'm going to pick one, I'm going to pick AMD.
Okay,
Bishi?
It's very helpful.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. That was FireEye, FEYE, and AMD Advanced Micro Devices. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. Now let's talk a little bit about the market, about the talking point is about three reasons not to panic in this sell-off. And I gave you the positives, or the reasons to stay in there. One is sell-offs always turn into rallies at some point. Two, what was two? I forget two. I'm trying to remember. I closed my notes. And then three was sticking with your strategy. As long as your strategy is intact and your positions are in line with your goals, then you're fine. Okay. Now, the negatives are valuations are high. You know, years and years and roughly a decade of next to free money by central banks. Money printing has elevated asset prices, created cryptocurrencies, wreaked all types of havoc in our financial system, and asset valuations are once again elevated due to central bank manipulation, shall I say, over many, many years. So certainly valuations are very, very high broadly. Now, that doesn't mean there's not opportunity. There are opportunities in the marketplace in various areas. So that's one negative. Okay. Number two is that situation is changing. cost of capital is rising, LIBOR is up, credit spreads are increasing, bond prices, bond yields are up, which changes the dynamic of valuations and liquidity in the marketplace. Okay, so that's number two, is things are changing. The world is changing. And when I say the world, the bond world, the bond market, which is honestly the most important market out there. And lastly, number three is the geopolitical situation. And I'm not talking really about North Korea, because a lot of that is fear. What I'm mainly talking about is the trade wars, the trade winds, the tariffs that we're dealing with Trump, and frankly, Brexit as well, because that's changing the trade dynamics of Great Britain. And they're a large player in the global marketplace. And frankly, globalization is causing social stresses throughout the world, not just here in America. It's not just about our Rust Belt or Detroit and the auto industry here. This is something that is consistent throughout the world. And those pressures, those social pressures, are likely to put pressure on globalization. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to, I think, change globalization over the long term, but I think we're set for some setbacks that will change the dynamic and create uncertainty when it comes to trade globally. Now let's get back to your calls. Get back to the phone lines at 888-99-CHART. That's our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, guys. I'm calling in on a question regarding buying a stock or a fund that is from foreign market. I was looking at the Vanguard ETF developed market. The symbol is VEA. So when you purchase this fund, how are the taxes reflected when it's from a foreign country? Wondered how those are paid on your, reflected on your tax return. I'll be listening for the answer. Thank you.
All right, looking at VEA, Vanguard FTSE Developed Markets ETF. And this is a name that invests in foreign stocks. 95.5% of its assets are invested in foreign companies. Its top holdings are companies like Nestle, HSBC, Novartis, Samsung, and Toyota Motors. But they're very broadly diversified. Those top five holdings only account for 5% of total assets. So very, very diversified. It's a large cap kind of blend fund. I mean, they have a little bit of growth, a little bit of value, but very broadly diversified in the developed markets. But I'm not a fan. Technically, it does not look very strong. It's very weak. It's consolidating in a negative manner. And to me, this is broad. More broadly, this is an area that, even though generally is more undervalued or more attractively valued than our U.S. markets, it's still overvalued in general, and you have the ECB, which is a large part of this of the developed markets that it's invested in, the European Union. They are have already cut their stimulus and plan to end that later this year in September, and that is changing the dynamic of European marketplaces, and one of the big reasons why we're having this volatility and asset prices starting to adjust. So while it's a good fund, I don't think it's a place I would want to be at the current time. Let's go to Sarvesh in Texas. How you doing, Sarvesh?
Hey, pretty good, Justin. How are you doing?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Hi, yes. Justin. I'm trying to balance my portfolio. I've noticed it's very tech heavy, and with the recent volatility, the portfolio is getting hit a lot. So I wanted to, for my future funds, add a little diversity. And I was looking at, I already added ABVV and looking at MO and HASI as a couple of potential new stocks I would like to add in my portfolio. So wanted to get your thoughts on MO and HASI and what would be good entry points for those.
Okay. He's looking at MO, Altria Group. They manufacture cigarettes and other tobacco products, mainly sold on their Marlboro and Black and Mild names. Now, this is the domestic company, the domestic Philip Morris, right? It used to be Philip Morris, and now there's Philip Morris International, which is all global, and then there's Altria Group, which is all domestic. Certainly, Philip Morris International has more growth, simply because the globally cigarette use is still roughly on the rise, whereas domestically people aren't smoking nearly as much as they used to, right? People are more educated about the effects, harmful effects of smoking, and so cigarette usage is on the decline. Now, that doesn't mean Altria Group isn't increasing their earnings, because they are. For 2011, they made $1.05. Next year, they're supposed to make $4.36 a share. So they're certainly improving their improving their earnings. Their dividend yield is 4.5%. Modest amount of debt. Return on equity is 46%. That's a positive. Are you trying to look long term?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely 5+ years.
Okay. I'm still a bigger fan of Philip Morris International, if I'm going to go with MO or Philip Morris, but I like them both. But I would go with Philip Morris International because of that potential growth of usage of cigarettes worldwide, as opposed to MO, Altria, which is only domestic. So I would go with that. What was the other name?
The other name was HASI, H as in Harris, Apple, Sam, and I, as in iPhone.
Is this Hannon Armstrong?
Yeah, infrastructure.
So this is a REIT providing debt equity financing for sustainable infrastructure projects throughout the United States. So it's a REIT, a mortgage REIT. But the mortgages, it looks like, are tied to infrastructure projects. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And, with the recent budgets of, focusing more on the infrastructure, I thought, this would be a good play long term.
Okay. Let me take a look at this. So we have revenues up 36% year over year. Certainly growing. Earnings up 7% year over year. Yields about 6.8%. Now that seems high, but it is a REIT, and so they are required to pay out 90% of their net income to shareholders. So that's a positive. Definitely a modest amount of debt, especially for a name like this. Let me look at kind of the valuation here. Definitely not overvalued. I like the REIT space. Earnings per share year over year. Looks like my other system saying it's down 44%. Return on equity long term only about 5%. That's kind of an issue for me, but it is the REIT space. They typically aren't huge. Let me look. It's definitely at support. I like the REIT space right now because I do think interest rates aren't going to go a ton higher in the near term. I kind of like it. I like what you're talking about. I don't think, certainly not super overvalued, not super undervalued either. So I kind of like it. So I would go with Hannon Armstrong. MO, Philip Morris, that's more of a preference there. And I like Philip Morris over MO.
Really appreciate it, Justin. Thanks for your advice.
No problem.
Great show.
Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now I can feel like you've got one hand tied behind your back when it comes to your 401k. Why is that? It's because you typically are limited in your choices in your plan, the ones that you can invest in. Now, we try to help you make these tough decisions, but it's difficult to do on a consistent basis. But Luckily, we have launched a service called Active 401k. You may have heard of it from Steve and I talking about it. Now, all you have to do is follow the instructions to help you make the best possible choices from within your employer's specific plan. It's like having a financial advisor helping navigate the choices and keep your 401k maximized. It will rank your current funds based on fees, current market trends, and past performance. And then it creates an allocation specifically for you and your risk tolerance. So if you want to find out more, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Active 401k.
Let's get back to your calls on Invest Talk for this Thursday, March 29th. An investor who has a well-conceived long-term investment strategy should not be overly concerned with the short-term movements of the market. Three reasons not to sell after a market downturn. That's next time. You have a question for Justin right now? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him on Invest Talk.
+888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. And we only have about 5 minutes left, so if you're going to do it, you got to do it now. Let's quickly talk about the credit markets and the performance of the fixed income market so far this year have been decidedly negative, pretty much negative across the board, which, you know, in the bond market, that's kind of a big deal because the bond's supposed to be steady. The short-term bond index registered a loss of about 0.5%, which, you know, short-term bonds are supposed to be stable. 0.5% is not really a huge move, but certainly a loss there because of the rise in interest rates. Now, the intermediate bond index declined 1.6%, and the long-term core bond index fell 4.25%. Now, this is a good example of why interest rates move, the shorter duration bonds can hold up much better. So you're talking about almost a 4% difference in performance between short and long-term bonds. Now, inflation-protected securities only fell about 1.3%, even though inflation expectations did go a little bit higher. You see short-term rates, the two-year Treasury bond rose 40 basis points and has risen 109 basis points since the beginning of last year, which is over 1%. 100 basis points is a 1% move. So currently the two-year is at around 2.3%. That's the highest level since August 2008. Now the corporate bond index declined about 2.83%. Two reasons: higher interest rates and credit spreads widened out, meaning investors are demanding more interest for risk in the corporate bond sector. Now, high-yield bonds held up actually better. They were down less than 1% because their yields tend to be higher, and that buffers investors from the change in yields, the rise in yields and duration risk. Okay, and I can get into the specifics, but that's basically what it does. Fixed income markets also didn't do very well, fell about 2%. And in general, you're seeing a lot of underperformance, bad performance out of the bond sector. Now, this is it's not anything crazy to worry about at this point. Even though credit spreads are getting wider, they're not at levels to really worry investors, worry the market. But you're seeing leverage across the system, especially in the investment grade world, becoming higher, and that is starting to worry bond investors. The mergers and acquisition spree is definitely causing some stress. So be aware of that and know that the bond market sell-off is very important, much more important than the equity market sell-off. Now let's take a quick question from investtalk.com. Ray listens to our podcast and he submitted this question on investtalk.com. What are your thoughts about purchasing ProShares S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats? NOBL is the symbol. He said, as a long-term hold, 20 plus years, would it make more sense to focus on growth stocks, funds rather than dividends for a long-term horizon. Now, what he's looking at is an ETF that holds the dividend aristocrats of the S&P 500, meaning companies that have consistently paid and raised their dividend over extended periods of time through all economic cycles. And the yield's about 1.7%, which is about the average for the S&P 500. So it's certainly not overexposed or over... he doesn't have a dividend yield much higher than the overall index, so that's not what you're really going after. You're going after that consistency and that growth, and focusing on dividends, and really, dividend investing is about value investing. So is that something that is better than growth investing? And the answer is yes. And if you look back on the 1986, value investing outperforms growth investing by about 4% per year. Now that changes, and there's many years in a row where growth outperforms, and we've seen that recently, but value investing is definitely much better. And I like this ETF. It's not fantastic. It's about average. But I think long-term, the strategy of focusing on dividends is a great way to go, and that's what we do at KPP as well. Now time to sign off. You can see more about today's talking point. 3 reasons to not sell after a market downturn right there on InvestTalk.com. There's a link to a replay of today's program as well. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Steve Peasen and I thank you for making us part of your day. Let's meet here again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is President and Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.